You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
West side!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans. I am the godfather, Nate Milton, joined by my tag team partner, the one and only Marcus Vandenberg. What is going on, Brother Marcus?
Would that make this rhyme time instead of crime time?
Yo, yo, yo. It's time to pop a 40 and check your rollies. I wonder what type of tag team we'd be if we they decided to put us in the WWE.
It's a good question. I don't know. I've never compared myself to a wrestler, so I don't know where I would fit under the landscape here.
Like, I'm thinking, like, since you're light-skinned, so they'd obviously have you doing something a little intellectual, but I also think that you're black, so...
That would cancel,
like,
out both.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
You'd be like Xavier Woods when he came out looking like Lionel Richie with the little glittery outfit.
Ugh, that mustache.
Yeah, and I'd just be like the big, angry muscle dude in the back, even though I'm not that muscly.
Yeah.
But they're like, we got to find something for... Either that or they'd have me be like... who was the guy? It was in Men on a Mission. Oscar was the rapper.
Yes, he was the rapper.
They'd have me out there like Oscar.
And that's why I'm not in wrestling, folks.
Wrestling. But yeah, that's the bad of wrestling, but we do have some good in wrestling coming up on this show. As we promoted last week, JTG of Crime Time is on the program. In addition to that, we got some craziness in segment four to talk about. But I think, Marcus, we're going to start off by talking about the postseason, both in hockey as well as the NBA, and what do you want to go first? I'll let you have the choice this week. Do you want to start hockey, or do you want to start on the hardwood?
Yeah, let's do NBA.
All right, the NBA finals are in full effect, and much to the delight of friend of the program, Hat Club Andy, the Cavaliers are up 2-1 on the Golden State Warriors as of this recording. Marcus, I predicted the Warriors in six, as did you, I believe. I'm still going with that prediction, but man, I think you got to give a lot of credit to what the Cavaliers have been able to do after losing game one and losing Kyrie Irving in that game.
Yeah, I definitely Cleveland deserves a lot of credit. LeBron James, you can look at his inefficiency as all you want, but so far he's been carrying this team on his back. And just like yourself, even though they're down 2-1, I still feel like the Warriors are the better team in this series, and I think they showed enough in that fourth quarter of game three that if this carries over into game four and they can come back home tied up at two, then I think the series could take a shift, and it might be a game four is going to be critical, because, I mean, if the Warriors go down 3-1 despite going back home, I think they're in a bit of trouble. But if they can get it even somehow, and really the change of series, remember the finals used to be 2-3-2.
Yes.
Just imagine if Cleveland had two more home games to deal with in order to help close out the series.
Yeah, and I do think, man, that Golden State not only is the better team, but they're the deeper team. Like, we even got an appearance from David Lee last night, and he was actually doing work out there. Granted, he's been rested for most of the season, so he's probably got the freshest legs out there on the court. But they were actually starting to make some headway when David Lee came into the game. The thing with Cleveland, though, is – I think as a byproduct of losing Kevin Love and also losing Kyrie Irving, they found a gritty defensive tenor that we hadn't seen for most of the season. And, you know, you got guys out there like Mozgov and Shumpert who got a little banged up last night. And now, you know, the pride of Cleveland by way of Australia, Matthew Dellavedova, like, these guys are out there and they're playing their roles, they're playing their positions, and they're helping LeBron when they need to. You know, Deli hit some big shots last night. But for the most part, it's a lot of grit, a lot of slowing the game down, bringing the tempo down, and taking Golden State into a street fight and seeing if they can respond.
Yeah, I'm not sure how. I mean, what Dellavedova did in game 3, I don't expect a repeat performance of that in terms of the offensive side. I think defensively he'll still be a pain in the ass, but offensively he set a playoff career high with 20 points, and I just don't see that happening on another night. So that's going to require someone else on that Cleveland team to step up in game 4. And based on what J.R. Smith and Shumpert have done so far, I wouldn't consider them locks to be that person. So, you know, they're only going 8 deep, really. 7 if you don't count Mike Miller. So there's only so much LeBron can do. He played 46 minutes in game 3. He's had one day off between game 3 and game 4. So eventually you would think that he's going to wear down at some point.
Yeah, I think that that's what's going to eventually happen. But I think, you know, just speaking about LeBron James, win or lose, after the first 3 games of this series where he's put up the most points in 3 consecutive games in NBA Finals history, I think that, man, win or lose, you cannot dispute this guy's talent, his ability, his heart. And let's just say, man, for by hook or by crook, they find a way to win this series and LeBron gets another ring with these guys. You know, to me, Michael Jordan is always going to be the best. But after that, if LeBron wins, I think LeBron is second best all time.
I don't know if we can put him second best all time at age 30.
Like, I know, you know, obviously there's going to be discussions to be had with Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, you got your Kobe stands out there. What's up, KME? You know, you can make an argument for Tim Duncan, guys like that. But I just think, given the talent, or given the consistency that he's had over his career thus far, and then winning a title with this group of guys, it'd be like, you know, when Iverson went to the finals with basically, who do you have, Aaron McKee and Mutombo, and that was it?
And Ty Hill and Eric Snow, yeah.
Yeah, just basically Bird and the Midnight Falcons from the 5 Heartbeats. Like, you know Bird, but you don't know who the hell the Midnight Falcons are. And that's who LeBron is trying to win a championship with, against statistically the best team in the league by far.
Yeah, by far, but a team with no playoff experience, too. I mean,
so do you, and that's what I was going to ask you next, Marcus, because I am one that tends to believe in experience matters. A lot of, you know, my friends that are hardcore analytics folks don't believe in that. But are you one that says, you know, hey, you know, you've got to have some experience. You got to pay your dues to a certain extent to come up big in these big moments.
I think so. You got to have someone. I mean, especially you get to the finals. I mean, I think that's been the biggest issue, is they just look tense. And, you know, there's certain times on the floor where you're wondering, like, what are the players doing? They're passing up layups to take it out for threes. And I mean, the guy with the most experience on that team is Steve Kerr in terms of playoff experience.
Yeah.
In the finals. And they have no one on the roster who's been in the finals before. You look at the Cavaliers, who have guys who aren't playing, and Sean Marion and Miller plays sporadically, but all these guys have been in finals. I mean, they've been in consecutive finals for like the last 5 years. And I think that does help provide them a leadership. And also even David Blatt. You know, people ripped on David Blatt, but he's a guy who's coached at the highest level overseas, and he's been in championship situations where you can't compare to the finals. He's been to the quote-unquote final game in his respective leagues multiple times. So, and that's where Kerr, as a rookie coach, a true rookie coach, doesn't really have that experience. So I think there's definitely some key factors going in Cleveland's direction.
The crazy thing with the Warriors to me, though, is their shooting seems to be contagious, both positively and negatively. Like, when guys are hot, as we've seen through the regular season and through most of the playoffs, when they get hot, man, everybody gets hot and they can shoot you out of the building. But when they get cold, like these first 3 games, you know, you've had spurts here from Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry had an okay game one, and he heated up towards the end of game three. But when they get cold, they go cold.
Yeah, and this was similar to the Memphis series where they fell behind with 2-1, and then that game four on the road in Memphis, they finally figured out how to attack the more physical team, and then they came back and finished them off. I am still expecting something similar to that in this series. I just talent. I think the talent is going to play out with this team. And I mean, Harrison Barnes, game three, 0 points. Draymond is still not looking like himself. You mentioned Steph Curry, who in that fourth quarter almost willed that team back to victory. And just imagine if Cleveland blew that lead. I think it was 17 points going into the fourth quarter, and they almost blew it. So I still think in the fourth quarter, when it's crunch time, as we've seen in game one and game two, LeBron is ready to show up and play, but the rest of the guys in the Cavaliers have not found a way to close out games efficiently.
You mentioned that Memphis series, and I think one of the key moves that they did was when they put Bogut on Tony Allen.
Yeah.
And that really changed the dynamics of that series. But the difference between Memphis, who I think overall Memphis is a better team than this Cavs team we're seeing right now, but the Cavs have that X factor in LeBron James. And it's like, you know, you can make all the matchups you want to for these perimeter players and these peripheral players, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the big players making big shots. And LeBron, for all the talk of how inefficient he's being, he's getting the job done. And Cleveland could very well be up 3-0 right now.
Yeah, they very well could be.
So, but all that being said, I think we're both still sticking with Golden State figuring this out.
Yeah, I think it might go 7. I think it's going to be tough for them to get two games on the road. So I think they'll go up 3-2, get back to Cleveland and tie it up. And then I still think game 7 in Oracle, LeBron be damned, the Warriors will find a way to win that.
I know you don't want to go as far as to say LeBron would be the second greatest player of all time, but would you concede that this would be maybe the greatest finals performance we've ever seen by one guy pretty much carrying a team?
In terms of individual performance?
Individual performance, especially in respect to the talent around him. Because Jordan had some great finals, but he also had Rodman and Pippen and Tony Kukoc and guys like that. Steve Kerr. You know, Kobe's had some great finals performances, but he's also had guys like Shaq and Pau Gasol surrounding him. Tim Duncan had Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, had David Robinson in that first finals. But is there anybody on this team that you would really say, other than LeBron James, is a bona fide NBA starter? Like, would you trade one of your guys for one of his guys?
I think Mazdoff would qualify as a starter. I mean,
like, I'm not saying that they're bums or they're not good, but they're not, you know, he doesn't have a Robin to his Batman, so to speak.
No, he does not, no.
It's like Batman and a bunch of Teen Titans. And I know you don't follow comic books, but that's the analogy I'm going to go with.
No, in terms of
it, more so than Teen Titans, it's like Batman and a bunch of police officers. Like, they're not even superheroes. They're just good cops.
They're not even all good cops. Some dirty cops out there.
Yeah, it's like Batman, Carl Winslow, and Alonzo from Training Day. That's who we were out there with.
Alonzo would be Shump.
And I guess Carl Winslow would be Dellavedova because he's like the adorable one. The hard-working, scrappy, adorable guy. And shout out to Dellavedova for, you know, normally I scoff at the kind of media over, you know, hyperbolics when it comes to white players or black players. You know, the black players are so athletic and all this other stuff, and the white players are scrappy and gritty, and they're gym rats, and they're hard-working. Damn it if Dellavedova isn't all of those white stereotypical things.
I don't think I mentioned him last year, but I did see him in Summer League last year. And he was definitely the same guy he is in the finals in terms of just that annoying, in-your-face guy who was like taking Summer League a little too seriously.
Right.
And I'm not surprised he's managed to stick in the lead, because he was an okay college player. But as you mentioned, let's be fair, you know, the white players have a harder time, I think, sort of making it in the NBA. And if he was a black player with the same skill set, I think he'd be fine. But, you know, I think he does face an uphill battle because of his skin color.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. If he's a black player with the same skill set, basically he would be like a poor man's Tony Allen, like just a guy that just can get in your jersey.
Yeah.
So shout out to Dellavedova. I ain't mad at you, Deli. Even though I am still mad at you for screwing up the Hawks season. But that's all water under the bridge now.
Yeah, for now it is.
Oh, speaking of water, Marcus, you know what happens when water gets really cold?
It freezes.
And when water freezes, you get ice. That is your Kings of Sports Science Minute. When water freezes, you get ice. And when you take some people and put them on the ice and get a puck on the ice, you get hockey. Not that I watch, but apparently something big is going on right now in hockey called the Stanley Cup Finals. And I think, you know, we should transition from the hardwood to the ice and get the people a little something called Marcus's Hockey Minute.
Can I be honest with you?
What's up?
This Stanley Cup has not really intrigued me.
How many games have you watched in the Stanley Cup Final, Marcus?
Let's do how many minutes I've watched the Stanley Cup Final.
Oh, wow. How many minutes have you watched, Marcus? More or less than one period?
Oh, less than one period.
What the hell? You're supposed to be the hockey Negro, Marcus. People come to you for hockey insight on this show.
It's true. I mean, for example, there's a game going on right now. We're doing a podcast. There's a game going on last Wednesday. We were doing a podcast. So that's two games that are out. Then they play on, they played Saturday night. I was out. Went to see San Andreas. So that's three games. And then I saw like the last 10 minutes of Monday's game. So, listen, they pit bad times way hot. Who wants to watch hockey on a Saturday night in June? I don't.
Okay, Marcus, I'm a freestyle it then. Okay, no Marcus's Hockey Minute this week, people. Maybe we'll have one next week. But now we're going to have Marcus's Movie Minute.
Yeah,
because I have not seen San Andreas, so let's find out what's going on with Marcus's Movie Minute. We may or may not have music for this. We may or may not have a beautiful song bringing us into this segment. So if you're hearing it now, then that means I actually decided to do some work. If not, hey, you know, it's a free podcast. You get what you pay for. So, Marcus, it's time for a Movie Minute. You went to see San Andreas this weekend featuring The Rock or starring The Rock. What are your thoughts on it?
You know, if you have low expectations, then it's hard to be disappointed. It was just a numbing action film featuring The Rock and Paul Giamatti, who I thought was the star of the movie as a seismologist. But the movie was just so over the top. And just, you know, if you live in California and you deal with earthquakes on a regular basis, then maybe it's not the movie for you, because it might cause some anxiety, because it's just so, it makes you believe that the end of the world is coming once the next quake hits in California. Yeah. And we're all doomed from LA to San Francisco. So it's
who's the basketball player that tweeted about that? Was it J.R. Smith or was it Shumpert?
I missed during that.
It was like during the first two games of the series out in Golden State, out in San Francisco or Oakland or wherever the hell they play. And he had just gone to see San Andreas, and he was like, can we get these games over with quickly?
Oh, I think it was Shumpert. Yeah, definitely. If you don't like earthquakes, don't see this movie, because it's just so over the top. But you know, The Rock is The Rock.
Damn, $25 million. I'm looking at the box office.
It's making money.
$25 million just over the weekend.
It's up to, well, that was last weekend. Yeah, so that was week two. It made more than Entourage, and that didn't make any money.
Yeah, Entourage, man, that
was a bust.
Did you watch the show?
No, I've never seen one episode.
See, I like the show, but I think the show ran out of gas probably around season three, maybe season four. And so...
And it went like, what, seven seasons or something?
Yeah. And the problem is, at the beginning, like the first 3 or 4 years, it was kind of these dudes on the come up. So you could relate to them. They were likable. But then, you know, around season 4 and beyond, they had already made it. And it just basically became about following these rich dudes that just slept with a lot of women and were generally unpleasant.
Hmm.
So it's like you changed the whole premise of the show from, you know, this scrappy actor and his group of friends, then they're trying to make it to the top. And now that they're at the top, they become the people that they didn't want to be. And so now you're going to make a movie about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they got to be a lot disappointed in terms of the money, because that's not good.
But at least, you know, it could be worse, Marcus. They could be your boys over at Walt Disney.
Tomorrowland?
Yeah, man.
I wanted to see it, and then I heard so many negative things about it. And then I saw the trailer, and I couldn't figure it out. So I was like, I'll wait.
Yeah, I'm reading a report now, and it says Disney may lose up to $100 million on this movie, man.
Oh, man.
Like, they should have just made a Captain EO movie.
The Ghost of Michael?
Hey, I'm sure they could have done some like CGI stuff, like with what was it, Fast and Furious 7 with Paul Walker?
Yeah.
And they could have just had like LaToya up there, and you wouldn't do some CGI, you wouldn't know the difference.
What are your thoughts on Jurassic World?
See, I like Chris Pratt. I think he's like this. He's a good actor, and I really liked him in Guardians of the Galaxy. But like I haven't really been down with the Jurassic series since the first one. Like that was the only one that really caught my attention.
Yeah, I sort of want to see it, but then I don't know if it's going to be any good. I feel like I already sat through one stupid film for the month.
Yeah, I think that might be like a Netflix once it comes out, or a Redbox.
We'll have to see. I mean, I feel like it'd be a better experience in the theater, but I don't know. I'll have to see what the reviews are like. And it's also 2 hours long.
Yeah, we got a really nice theater down here. It's called the Paragon, and we got like the seats that recline.
Mm-hmm.
But like the tickets are like 15, 16 bucks per seat. So it's like, I'm not spending $16 on some damn dinosaurs, especially if the movie isn't that good.
But it does feature 2 Law & Order alumni people.
Who, Ice-T? Is Ice-T in the movie?
Nope, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Okay.
And BD Wong.
Oh, yeah. He's good. He was on Oz, too.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they never tried to make a movie out of Oz.
To be what, NC-17?
Oh, like, I think Oz doesn't get a lot of love, like, or as much love as it should, because it was kind of like, Oz was one of the...
It was ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was like, before The Wire, before Sopranos, like, Oz was the deal. Like, what is Ernie Hudson going to do with all these criminals? And then, spoiler alert, Ernie Hudson died in the last episode.
Oh.
I think enough time has passed.
It's been, what, 10 years?
Least, yeah, like, if you haven't watched Oz in the last 10 years, you're probably not going to start today. There's one dude out there, damn it, I just got through episode 2. But yeah, Oz was a great show, yeah. But speaking of Entourage, like, if you were going to make a movie from one of those TV shows, like, what would you choose? Would it be, like, Sopranos or Breaking Bad or... Like, where would you go for the next TV to movie adaptation?
I think The Wire would be too hard to do.
Yeah, and it might be a little too real right about now.
Yeah. I didn't watch enough of The Sopranos to really get a good sense of the show. I think definitely the Sets and City stuff has worked as they're on their, I think, their third movie now they're doing.
Yeah.
They're working on, so. I would say Weeds, but it ended so poorly that I don't know where they go from there.
That's the problem with like a lot of these series. Like I think outside of Breaking Bad, most of these series long. Have yeah, and they don't know when to stop. Like Dexter, that wasn't very appealing. Sopranos, the series finale of Sopranos, just like come on, man. Entourage, they went on like 2 seasons too long.
Yeah, I mean that pretty much. I mean,
I never got into Madman.
Yeah, I didn't either. That covers most of the big HBO show. I mean, Boardwalk Empire just ended.
Maybe the only one that could make that jump is like The Walking Dead.
Like, I could see they're still on, so it's hard to say like how. I could see The Newsroom maybe as a one off.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how popular that show was, you know, big picture in terms of the numbers. But I think the premise could be you could focus on one event and stretch that over 2 hours. Maybe Eastbound and Down.
Oh, that would be
a comedy.
That could work. That might be the best one of all. Some Kenny Powers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, who's the character Will Ferrell played? The guy that was like Ric Flair. Ashley Schaefer.
Yeah.
The Ashley Schaefer Motors. Like, yeah, I could watch an Eastbound and Down movie. Yeah. That'd probably be the one that would work. They'd have to put The Rock in it, though, because, you know, The Rock is he's an A-list celebrity now. Like, he can open a movie.
It's really impressive to see how far this dude has come from Rocky Maivia to legitimate A-lister, highest paid actor in Hollywood. I mean, that's kudos to him.
So do you see San Andreas getting a sequel?
It's funny because at the very, very end, it gets all hokey and cheesy. And the last line is like the family looking over the bridge and it's all fucked up. And it's like, what do we do now? And The Rock goes, we rebuild. And I'm like, oh, great. This is leading to like some San Andreas 2 where they start rebuilding the city and another tweet happens. I don't know. Nothing surprised me. Hollywood's so lazy at this point. Nothing surprised me in terms of them trying to. And it's making money, so I think they could, if they could find a way to.
Who else was like, were there, who else was in this movie besides The Rock? Like any other big stars?
Giamatti, Carla Gelato.
Oh yeah, I know you're talking about.
Yeah.
Was she like The Rock's wife or something?
Mm-hmm. And the woman, let me find her name. It was the daughter who, you have this multiracial marriage and the daughter, Lily White, just didn't look mixed at all. Like, no black in this kid. Alexandra Daddario? I don't know how to pronounce her last name. She was on Texas Chainsaw 3D, True Detective, first season.
Okay.
Perry Jackson. She was Chase in Perry Jackson, the film series. Annabeth Chase.
Okay. Now, you know, what I'm actually looking forward to, we know we talked about the HBO series, mm-hmm. That Baller, The Ballers with The Rock.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be good.
I think that's what, later this month or is July?
Yeah, July, because Levitard's on there on one of the episodes.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, because basically for those that haven't seen it.
Oh, it's no, like, June 21st, coming up.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like, The Rock is a former player that's now, he's kind of like an agent that's like agent slash problem solver. For these athletes, and it's like he's going around and telling them how to manage their money and manage their personal lives. It looks really cool.
It's only got 6 episodes to start, but Peter Berg is directing the first one, so it should be interesting. And also Omar Benson Miller's in it as well.
Yeah, I think this will, like we said, anything that The Rock is involved with nowadays seems to at least have some level of success, so I don't see this project failing.
Which makes you wonder why he would ever come back to wrestle again. Outside of him just having the itch from being in his blood.
Yeah, like he doesn't need it.
No.
So he's made it. He's made it. So shout out to The Rock. And you know, we got an open invite if you ever want to come on. You know, Marcus did contribute to your success this weekend.
I gave you $31, Rock. Movies are expensive in L.A.
What'd the wife think of the movie?
She thought it was fine. She liked it. Anxiety from the earthquakes, but she liked it.
basically just kind of turn your brain off and enjoy the pretty pictures and the action for a while.
Yeah, I haven't been to a movie since. Oh, geez, I can't even tell you the last movie I saw. It might have been my first. No.
With Kevin Costner.
It might have been my first movie this year, actually.
The Mike Tyson training video montage.
Yeah. Yeah, it might have been my first movie all year. So yeah, I don't go to the movies that often. So it was enjoyable. Popcorn too. I mean, can't go wrong with popcorn.
So that was Marcus's movie minute. You know, if I thought ahead and had known that you really weren't paying attention to hockey, I would have called Brian Mann from Yahoo Movies and had him hop on.
How often does he go to the movies? Does he ever say? Or is he just fronting?
I don't know how often he goes to movies, but I know he watches a lot of movies.
Okay.
Like, I don't know how often he physically goes to a theater.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, he does digest a lot of films. So we were talking, doing Review and Impact this week before we went on and started recording, and he was just like, he's inundated with stuff on Jurassic World, because I guess that, you know, that's the big movie this week.
Yes, I should know this because we work at Yahoo. I should be checking out Yahoo movies on a daily basis to support Brian Mann, my friend and colleague.
Yeah, I don't know why. See, it's that East Coast, West Coast beef.
Whatever, he's not on Yahoo Sports. Brian, don't front. You've never been on our site. It's all right.
I'm sure he's reading all of your articles and Kevin Ioli stuff and Mike Oz. I'm sure Brian, that's his homepage every day.
Yeah, sure. Shout out to Mike Oz, who hit me up after my podcast last week, about the story off the top. So we'll have to have him on at some point and talk baseball.
Yeah, I miss Mike Oz. So we might have to talk to the Wizard maybe around All-Star break.
Okay.
That'll be good. Because we did. Like, we last week we talked a little baseball, but it's funny because both of us are big baseball fans, but in terms of talking about it on this show, it's a rare thing.
It's hard. I don't know if the listeners are baseball fans, and I mean, we did talk Chris Sexton no-hitter, but really, who cares about a guy you never heard of before, so it's right. Tough.
It's like you really don't get the storylines, and I think that's what most people want when they listen to sports radio. You don't get the storylines until mid-season at best.
Yeah, I mean, and there's been no...
Like, outside of the Josh Hamilton stuff, like, what's been the interesting storyline in baseball this season? Maybe the Astros?
I think the maturity of Bryce Harper as a player.
Yeah,
when he's
leading
not acting,
my fantasy team to victory.
Yeah, but when he's not acting like Bryce Harper, then it's like, all right, well, it's great that you're great on the field, but, you know, unless you're acting like an asshole, then people don't care, so.
And your boy's been hurt.
Puig is bad, though. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, definitely, we definitely need to reconnect with Mike Oz, who was one of the first group of guests we had on the show.
He was definitely the first, probably three or four shows, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we haven't spoken to Mike in a couple years, so yeah, we'll have to have him back on. But you know who we're going to have on next, Marcus?
Who's that?
I don't know why I asked you like you don't know.
Like that wasn't part of the interview?
Right. Like, A, you weren't part of the interview, and B, we haven't known we were going to talk to this person for the last couple weeks. But yeah, coming up next, if you don't know, that means you weren't paying attention because we said it off the top of the show. But coming up next, we have a great conversation. We're going to be talking to JTG, one half of Crime Time, former WWE superstar.
Oh, definitely former after reading this book. He's former,
yeah.
Right?
Former WWE superstar, but he is still active in the wrestling world. And now, as Marcus alluded to, he is an author with the great, great book, Damn, Why Did I Write This Book? So hopefully those of you out there listening to this show have purchased the book and know some of these great stories. But if not, we're going to talk to JTG, and hopefully he can convince you to buy this book and give him that money. Yeah, yeah. That money. Yeah, yeah. Like, now I'm just picturing that great skit from that pay-per-view with William Regal's dancing around him in a circle. That might be my favorite William Regal moment ever. Just put on the hat all sideways. William Regal. We won't be talking to William Regal next segment. Maybe we can talk to him in the future, though.
Maybe.
I don't know if you know anybody who knows William Regal.
I don't.
We're big overseas, though. We got a big UK contingent. Listen to the show. Maybe they can convince him. Do our work for us. That's what we're all about here. But coming up next again, we got... Instead of lazy, I'm just... Why work harder when you can work smarter, Marcus?
Yeah, keep telling yourself that.
That's the American way. We're coming up next. We are talking to JTG of Crime Time. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this. I tipped the scales like the king of the south. Forgot that I was fat, I lost my way. But now I'm back looking for the shade I saw. And not wonders, Scott Summers. So don't make me take off my stunners. Bobby Ray, you know you got my numbers. And them deer can't see but us like hunters. You can't see past my shades, past my shades, past my shades. And you can't see past my shades, past my shades, past my shades. And you can't see past my shades, past my shades, past my shades. And you can't see past my shades, past my shades, past my shades.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, sports talk for our generation. Hope of the world is in our generation. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Take a lesson from our elders, don't make the same mistake. Let's do the world with love and get rid of all the hate. Our elders taught us one thing.
Yo, 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 yo. Pop a 40 and check your rollies. It's crime time.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn. We're bringing it, bringing it, bringing the hood to you. We're bringing it, bringing it. What you gonna do? We're bringing it, bringing it, bringing the hood to you. We're bringing it, bringing it. Yeah, that's how.
Hey, yo, no more Hollywood. Nah. This is Hollywood. Yeah. And it's crime time. Be scared? You probably should. I come from the streets. I was raised in the gutter. I run up on your mother for that bread and butter.
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nate here, brought to you by Place to Be Nation. Place to Be Nation is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest in sports, pop culture, music, comic books, whatever you're into. Place to Be Nation has it for you. You're down with the Kings. Place to Be Nation is down with the Kings. So get down with Place to Be Nation. Well, here it is, folks. We told you last week we were going to have a special guest on the program this week, Marcus, and I think it's about time. You know, we talked a little NBA, we talked a little hockey, but now it's time for the main event, if you will. Let the people know who's on the line with us.
Our special guest this week is a former WWE wrestler turned author. He's one half of Crime Time. He's the author of Damn, Why Did I Write This Book, JTG. What's up, JTG?
Yo, what's up? I usually do my own introduction, but I like that one. You know, the author and the...
You're like a Renaissance man.
I'm getting used to that now. Like, I never considered myself an author, but yeah, I did write a book, didn't I?
You did. It was a good book. We both read it.
Thank you, man.
Starting off, my first takeaway from reading the book was just the word heat and just sort of... How you summed up your time in the company. Looking back at things overall, would you consider your time in WWE a positive?
Oh yeah, definitely. It shaped me to be who the man I am, who the man that I am today. And I love who I am today, and I wouldn't have been where I am today if it wasn't for those experiences, the ups and downs that that polished me into the diamond that I am today.
Oh man, one of the things that I took away from the book, man, was basically it doesn't matter where you are, It doesn't matter whether you're in the boardroom or whether you're in the locker room, that high school type of politics and cliquishness, they'll always persist, man. And just some of these stories, like for the people out there that have not picked up this book, you should do it now, because just like the headphone story, for instance, like, come on, man. Like we really beefing on some headphones? When you were in the...
I know.
When you were in the midst of these stories, in the midst of these things happening to you, JTG, did you ever just kind of step outside of yourself and be like, come on, man, aren't we supposed to be professionals?
Oh, yeah, definitely. When you look from the outside, that's what made me write the book also, because I was looking at it from the outside looking in. When I got out of the situation that I was in, I was able to look at it and see how petty it was. And how petty and how much egos run rampant in the locker room and backstage.
You mentioned your buddy Shad, who you kindly tossed under the bus a couple times. what was his reaction when you wrote the book?
He didn't read. As of today, he hadn't read the whole book yet. He read certain chapters that people pointed out to him, and he doesn't care. He said that it was funny. The intent wasn't malice. You know, it was to be my intent was to be as straightforward and honest as possible, and create something that's entertaining. You know, I'm not entertaining in the ring, so I did it with literature.
Now, Shad may not have had a problem with it, but were you contacted by any other superstars that were like, "Come on, man, why you putting me on Front Street like that?"
No, I haven't. You know, maybe if I run into them, they will say something, but I don't think they're going to go out their way to call me to say anything.
In terms of the current guys, who are you still close with? Who's on the current roster?
I'm close with a few of the guys on the roster. You know, I'm close with Ziggler. Stay in contact with Zack Ryder, Bray Wyatt. Who else? You know, there's some other people that's not on the roster right now. But when you become a professional wrestler and you create these relationships, they're a lifelong bond. You know, you guys like pretty much could you travel up and down the road together, and you kind of like not expose yourself, but you share a lot of stories with these guys, and you kind of like your brother.
One of the things I always like to discuss, you know, when I have a chance to speak to somebody that's been in that environment, you know, in terms of the WWE, and I've had a chance to talk to, you know, various creative team members or guys that were in the locker room, as particularly being a black wrestler, did you ever feel like, man, you know, doesn't matter how hard I work because they've got a spot for me and it's a very narrow box, it's a very narrow palette of colors that they're going to allow me to paint with?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I'm not going to give you the political correct answer, which is no, I'm going to be honest. Yes, I definitely thought there was a ceiling for African-American wrestlers. Well, this is my personal opinion, through my experience and what I've seen and being a fan of wrestling. In the WWE, of course, I've definitely seen a ceiling.
What do you think it's going to take for that mindset to change? Will it take actually hiring minorities? What a shocker, I know. On the creative team to change this philosophy, or will it... Does it start at the very top with Vince McMahon?
I think there's a lot of aspects that come into play. There's a lot of things that come into play. Maybe society, you know. I think wrestling, especially WWE, they mirror and reflect society's image. So that's a whole different conversation. And then you have some people who are on the create who have a strong influence in creative. They still have a old mindset. You know, maybe they don't think that an African-American could be the face of the company, which I disagree with. There's been many superstars who had the, who I believe that could have been put in that position. You know, you have the Mark Henrys, you have the Bobby Lashleys, definitely the Shelton Benjamins. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and say throw my name in there too, why not?
No doubt.
I believe right now Kofi Kingston could be a great, champion, and I'm not talking about the world championship. I'm talking about the WWE championship, heavyweight championship, not the belt that was from WCW. I'm talking about the belt that's the face of the company, that the one that that John Cena has held, Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, those the ones who are faces of the company.
Now you talk about that creative aspect, and I do another show with Brian Mann, who was a former writer for the WWE, and he told me once about this great idea, and he's told it on the show before, that he had for you and David Otunga. It was going to be this team called New Money. I don't know if that ever got down to you, and you were going to kind of be like these two dudes that were, your gimmick wasn't that you were black, your gimmick was that you were rich, and you were going to be like the $1 million man, and he had this great thing worked up for you, and somebody told him, nah, nobody's ever going to buy that from those two guys. So when you hear things like that, man, it just makes me shake my head. It's like, this is wrestling. You can create, you know, we got a guy that was dead. He's a dead man, and he's been on TV for 20 years. So you can't tell me that two black guys have money. So when you hear stories like that, man, what does it make you feel?
Like, wow. You know, that from what I've experienced, you know, there's certain characters that, that they allow for African-Americans to play, and majority of them has been the big angry man, the crazy man, you have to be some sort of crazy or something like that, which I've seen right now with R-Truth and Alicia Fox.
Yep.
What other one? There is the...
You got the preacher?
Yeah, you got the preacher, and then you got the one that smiles all the time, the happy-go-lucky, I'm smiling one. Then you have the stereotypes.
Yeah.
Which I believe I was in that category.
And it's funny that you bring that up, because I think that, you know, to you and Shad's credit, you know, you took this stereotypical role and you brought it to a different level, much like I think, you know, the New Day they're doing right now, where this gimmick on paper is just terrible, but they've been able to put their own personality into it and make it something that actually works in spite of the creative behind it.
Yeah, up to this day, I still don't know what the gimmick is. You know, I don't watch the product, but I've seen a couple of vignettes and some of the reactions and the memes on social media, and I just can't put my finger on what the gimmick is. It just looks like three happy black guys. I thought they was going with the direction of being like reverends. They were doing the whole church gimmick, but I don't even know if it's that. Like, can you explain to me what the gimmick is?
I think when they first started, it was very generic, very Kirk Franklin. Like, we gonna be happy.
Yeah,
very churchy. Stomp our feet and... Yeah, and they were trying to be baby faces, and it obviously didn't work. But I think that now they're more like the heels that smile in your face, but you know that they're lying to you. And I think Kofi in particular does a great job with that, just because, you know, he's got that great smile, and it's like, oh, but this dude is lying to you through his teeth. And I think you're getting to see more of the personality of Kofi and Big E and Xavier, whereas before it seemed like somebody was writing these promos for them, like Big E talking in the preacher's voice and stuff.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever good when the writers, you have to rely on the writers 100%. And that's what got Chad and I over, was that the fact that the writers just gave us a topic, what point that we needed to get across, and Chad and I were able to use our own, we were able to do our own promos and have fun with it.
I would say this is probably the biggest, or I would say the best booked black tag team since Prime Time in terms of what they're doing. Because I think the Prime Time players, they sort of dropped the ball there. But I think they finally figured out a way to get these guys over, which, I mean, more power to them, because we've seen in the past with black wrestlers, it's really a struggle for them, for whatever reason, to portray that on the screen.
Yes, I agree. Definitely.
In terms of the locker room environment, you went into a lot of stories just about sort of the egos and everything that goes on. Is there anyone on top who's not a dick in the locker room? It sounds like the higher up you get in the space, you become more of an asshole. And I feel like that must be troubling for the younger guys coming up.
Yeah, there's a lot of top guys who are not dicks and who extended their hand to help up-and-coming superstars. You know, right off the top of my head, who comes to mind is, of course, Chris Jericho. You have the Rey Mysterios. You know, JBL was very helpful to me when he liked me. So at first, he had to get to know me, and he saw a lot of potential in me, and he started to give me a lot of advice. He pulled me to the side and gave me a lot of advice. There's a few more I can't think off the top of my head, but those are the three that came to mind.
it's funny because I think that, you know, just through reading your book and just through, you know, watching you over the years, it's like, man, there is so much potential on the table, you know. And I was going back before we had a chance to talk to you tonight, just looking online at some of the great backstage skits that you guys did, you know, the one with William Regal, where you guys were doing the money, yeah, yeah, in the office. That was just crazy. And then the one where Triple H and Shawn Michaels needed to buy some tickets, and you guys just happened to be outside the arena and you sold the tickets. It's like, man, these guys are just so good, and this is supposed to be an entertainment company, but they couldn't find a role for you guys. And, you know, it just makes me think as a fan that, is it really about entertaining the people, or is it about entertaining the people in the front office?
It's exactly that's when you said B, entertaining the people in the office, and they kind of like choose who they want. Their stars are handpicked. If you have everything that is to be a WWE champion, but you just happen to piss off the wrong person backstage, guess what? You're not going to be the WWE champion. You pissed off the wrong person. It is politics.
How would you describe your last year or so in the company? Because the last time I saw you was probably 2012 or 13, and I know at that point you were off TV, but you're getting your downside. What was that like, where you know you were getting paid, but you weren't being active, but you were still, you know, expected to be on call, essentially?
I kind of saw the writing on the wall, and that's when I started to wanting to branch out of wrestling. You know, at that point, I still loved wrestling, but I wasn't in love with wrestling. And I started to work on other projects. You know, I didn't want to be one of those wrestlers that want to hang on to the dream and hopefully one day they could get back in the ring and do it one more time, one more match. It's like, you know, that was a good point in my life. You know, that's a chapter. Now it's time to move on. And I was taking my money and investing it and looking into starting my own business, starting other businesses with other partners.
Okay. Well, you know, you talk about the next chapter, and I think right now wrestling in terms of the business is kind of moving into a new chapter where you're seeing companies like Lucha Underground, companies like ROH, companies like the Global Force that Jeff Jarrett is starting. So I think there's more opportunities for talent out there than maybe ever before. And we know you and Shad are back together. Do any of those opportunities intrigue you guys at this moment?
Yeah, if a company presents itself and, you know, they have some, you know, they're talking the right amount of money, you know, definitely. Definitely. I'm all about that. Of course, money, yeah, yeah. So if they're talking that money and they could pull me away, but, you know, take some of the attention that I'm focusing on my businesses to them, you know, I'm open for it. But right now I'm not really reaching out to companies. You know, if I like what they're, if they approach me and I like what they're saying, you know, we could talk some more business. But I'm not really, I'm banging down doors like, hey, you need some crime time on your show? It's like,
we do have some questions from our listeners. Derek McDonald wants to know, how did the black wrestlers take the news when Michael Hayes called Mark Henry the N-word?
Some wrestlers, some of the African American wrestlers, you know, they can't really express themselves the way they really want to because of that environment that they're in. You know, if they really speak their mind, you know, that's gonna, you know, get heat, of course. So you gotta pretty much play the game. You know, I know some wrestlers with different mindsets. They were, some were pissed off, and some of them were very, quick to forgive.
We got a question here from Johnny Travers, who asks a two-part question. Part one, what ideas did creative come up with for you guys, if any, other than Crime Time? And number two, did you pitch any ideas to them that were turned down?
With Crime Time, we came up with the idea for Crime Time, and we were down at OVW, and Vince saw that and hired us immediately. He never saw us wrestle. And they heat up the whole Crime Time idea. When we got up there, that's when we were trying to came up with the name Crime Time. At the first, our names were Neighborhoodies. And then we got, I'm glad that changed. And also, when we got up there, because of trademark issues and copyrights and all that good stuff, We went through a whole bunch of names. At first, it wasn't Crime Time. You know, at first they wanted to call us Hoodie Nation, and they wanted to give us a fag, and we were going to be like a the heads of the nation, and everyone in the audience was going to have. They had like this crazy idea. I'm like, please don't let that. I hope that name is taken. Please, I don't want that. Hoodie Nation. They was going to give us a flag, and we were going to spend an hour like out of a doomsday. And when it came to ideas, I pitched a whole bunch of ideas to creative. You know, when I was still passionate and I still wanted, you know, at the back of my head, I saw, because I had so much, I was told in the beginning of my career, you know, Vince, he loved Crime Time, and he definitely loved me because he saw that I had a lot of personality and charisma. You know, every now and then, he's like, JTG, you're the future, kid. You got so much charisma and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, when Vince McMahon tells you that, you know, you have a lot of course, that's going to inspire you. So during my solo career, I pitched a whole bunch of ideas.
Can you briefly explain the Muppet idea for people who haven't heard it yet?
The Muppet idea?
Yeah, because that's what I remember you telling me.
Yeah, that wasn't the last idea I pitched, but one of the ideas that I pitched towards the during my solo career was to have a Muppet be my conscience. Kind of similar to what you're seeing with R-Truth, but mine was going to be, I was going to be talking to myself, and myself would have been, of course, when you talk to yourself, you're talking to your conscience. So my conscience would have been represented by a Muppet that only the WWE universe could see and myself can see. And so if I was doing a backstage segment, let's say I was doing a backstage segment with one of the divas, and I thought to myself that it was sexy. The Muppet would be talking, you know, very reckless. It was a rude mouth puppet. I was like, damn, girl, you're sexy. And then the audience would get a good chuckle out of it. So, and I would get a good chuckle out of it, but Diva would have to be a great actress and not react to it.
That's great. It's almost like the Obama translator. Like you're saying something normal and then he coming out of his mouth sideways.
Exactly. Yeah, it would have been a lot of fun. You know, it would have been good for the kids. That's what, because when I pitched the idea to Vince, Vince loved it because he saw that it was a market for kids. He's like, oh, this is great. The merchandise for this would be great. You know, and I was like, I'm thinking dollars. You know, when I came up with this, when I told Vince the idea and he loved it, shit, when I got home, I took my wife to Mr. Childs in Beverly Hills because I was like, well, we about to be rich, you know.
Why do you, real quick before Marcus gets into some more listener questions, why do you think, because, you know, obviously Vince McMahon saw something in you, do you think it was just one of those things where, you know, when the wind changed, Vince's mind changed, so one day he could love you, the next day he's not thinking about you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And a lot of that information is in the book, Damn, Why Did I Write This Book? I don't want to give too much information away, but I do have to take responsibility for some of those mind-changing career changes. And also what I'm going to put in my next book is how to play the game. You know, this next book that I'm going to write is definitely going to be for individuals who want to get into the wrestling business, and if you want to be successful, you're going to have to definitely learn how to play the game.
Yeah, anyway, that would be good advice for the up and coming wrestlers. Joshua wants to know, do you still feel some type of way about the glasses deal ending? Your shades.
No. And for those who didn't read the book, that's a very entertaining and good glimpse into the subculture of wrestling is the Shade on the Shades chapter. It's behind me.
All right. Chad Rivera, friend of the program, asks, you know, did you feel some type of way when the fans started up the Is JTG Still Employed site and the Twitter thing?
No, I was entertained by it. I was definitely entertained by the memes. I was definitely entertained by the by some of the tweets I was getting. It was like, wow. I thought it was funny. I was laughing along with the fans.
It's like, at least you know people still care.
Yeah, right?
And our last listener question, Chris Ely wants to know, what are your thoughts on John Cena as a person?
As a person, if he likes you, he's the coolest man in the world. Mm-hmm. When I first got there, he liked me and he gave me a ton of advice and he was definitely helpful. I remember in the beginning of my career, when we were home, which was only like 2 days out of the week, a group of us would play Command and Conquer on the PC. And it was like, this guy's down there, he's cool, he plays video games too. It was like, and then throughout my career, you know, that changed. And if he does, if you're not on his good side, whew. Not good.
Well, real quick, my last question for you, JTG, is, you know, a lot of fans are optimistic about the future of the WWE, and a lot of that comes from, you know, NXT and some of the stuff that is going on down there, and they're putting a lot of the credit for that on Triple H's shoulders. Having worked in that environment and having worked with Triple H, do you see the WWE really being that much different whenever he takes control from Vince McMahon?
It was definitely going to be different. I don't know if that's going to be good or bad as of right now. I'm glad that their NXT is getting some attention, but I think they need to worry about their current product right now and start worrying about the future so much.
Go ahead.
No, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, my last question for you is, you know, we taught wrestling on the show. We're two black guys, and often race is an issue. What would you just, you know, tell the marks out there who view the WWE as this equal opportunity place where everyone's on the same level? What would you just explain to him, would explain to fans that they might know coming from a black perspective?
From a black perspective?
Yeah, in terms of an uphill battle you guys are facing in the locker room, let alone with the politics, but just being black, what kind of uphill battle you guys facing in addition to everything else?
Or besides saying the ceiling, the glass ceiling, well, just look at for Marks who's saying that it is equal. Well, just look at our past. Have you seen a black champion? And have you seen a black person be the face of the company? And when I say black, I'm talking about not The Rock. You know, but The Rock is African American. The Rock is black, but he's not identified as black. So the writing's on the wall. You know, I keep hearing that, you know, when they post my interviews or articles on Facebook or Twitter, and then I read some of the comments. It's like, oh, what about The Rock? He's black. There's equal opportunities. The WWE's not racist. It's like, I'm not saying the WWE's racist, but, you know, come on now. other wrestling companies have black champions. What is the WWE going to do it?
Okay. Yeah, and the thing with The Rock is, The Rock, you know, yes, granted, he's part black, but he's arguably one of the biggest stars of all time. So it wouldn't have mattered if The Rock was black, white, Chinese. If he was had the same skill set, he would have made that money, because, you know, he's one of those once-in-a-lifetime type of cats.
You have to be given that opportunity.
And he was a second-generation wrestler, which I think, you know, plays into a lot of getting that opportunity.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yes.
One quick thing. What are your thoughts about dirt sheets in general?
I really don't really read the dirt sheets. If any information that I get, it's pretty much off of Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really... Because I really don't follow the product right now, so I really could care less what's really going on.
Oh, you're not missing much, don't worry.
Okay, yeah, so I've heard.
Yeah.
Speaking of Twitter, I know the fans are going to want to talk to you and ask you more questions and find out where they can get the book. So where can people find you on social media, and how can they get their hands on Damn, Why Did I Write This Book?
Damn, Why Did I Write This Book is on all e-reader platforms, you know, Kobo, Nook, Google Play, Amazon, PayHip, and the PayHip link is on my Twitter account. My Twitter profile is JTG1284. My Instagram profile is JTG121084, and you can also find the link there at PayHip for Dan Why Did I Write This Book.
All right, well, we definitely appreciate you stopping through, brother. We wish you the best of success. We hope that, you know, if you feel like it, if you got some time down the road, you come back on, because I think we just scratched the surface of, you know, your experience in this crazy business called pro wrestling.
Oh, yes. The cartoon world of professional wrestling.
Oh, real quick, I do have to send along a word from my friend Kim that lives down in North Carolina. She's a big fan, and so she says, holla at your girl. So that's all I'm going to say. I told her I was going to say it, so.
Don't get him in trouble with his wife, man. Don't get him caught up.
Hey. I'm just a conduit. Don't shoot the messenger. Uh-huh. I'm going to start a show called Damn, Why Did I Start This Podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Thank you guys for having me, man. I enjoyed
it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Topics to talk about.
We definitely appreciate it, man. And again, man, best of luck to you, man. Keep making that money. Money. Yeah. that is the one and only JTG of Crime Time. We are the kings of sport, and we'll be back right after this. Somebody's got to take care. And I swear it isn't fair. And suspended animation, we ain't trying to go nowhere. Out here in these streets, we're so young and all alone. We ain't even old enough to realize we're on our own. Living life in these hard streets, where it's like they're lost in mind. Is there any way to find? Are we running out of time out here? Listen. Hey, who's worrying about you, babe, when you wildin' out? Running around in these streets.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got 4 or 5 kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard time. That's hard time.
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nate ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we got to let you know about the good people over at High Voltage Radio. HighVoltageRadio.com is your spot for the latest, greatest, and craziest podcast available on the planet today. We are a part of the High Voltage family, but you can also check out shows like Attack of the Fangirls, Axology, Bayside High and Drunk, The Ebony and Ivory Cast, Mad Mock, Robin Slim, Z-Pac Nation, Podcast Unknown, and of course, Mr. Throwback Thursday, hosted by frenemies of the program, Bill and Jamie, who we will be talking to squash this beef sometime in the very near future. But if you want to check out those shows, go to highvoltageradio.com and check them out. Tell them the King sent you. So, Marcus, it is time for segment 4, the repository of ratchetness, where we take a look at all the craziness going on in the world of sports and pop culture. And we've got a bit of a follow-up to a topic that we discussed last week in segment 4.
We do. We're back on Caitlyn Jenner. And as we mentioned in our discussion, we sort of went over our thoughts, and I thought part of this just didn't feel genuine to me. And someone with a lot more power than myself has now come out and has piled on that argument. And Bob Costas, who this week took a jab at ESPN for what they're doing with the Arthur Ashe Award. Let me find the quote here. Costas said, awarding the Arthur Ashe Award to Caitlyn Jenner is just crass exploitation. Who told Dan Patrick this? It's a tabloid play. In the broad world of sports, I'm pretty sure they could have found, and this is not anything against Caitlyn Jenner, I'm pretty sure they could have found someone who is much closer to actively involved in sports who would have been deserving of what the award represents. I think this is a play to pump up audience the way lots of things are put on television, to attract eyeballs, not because of validity, but because of whatever the kind of darker factor is.
I can't say that he's wrong. You know, Bob Costas, you know, full disclosure, I am a all-time fan of Bob Costas. I think that he is probably my favorite sportscaster of all time, and I think he may be the best sportscaster of all time, if not the best. Certainly, he's in the discussion. And, you know, you and I talked about this last week, like you said, where we did not dismiss Caitlyn Jenner for this, but the whole thing did seem a little slick and a little produced.
Yeah, and as I read on the story, my full disclosure is, so ESPN's, or the ESPY's executive producer, Maura Mann, put out a statement. I was actually an ESPY intern way back in 2002 and worked with Maura Mann and her production team. ESPY's are interesting. It was my first experience sort of working on like an award show of that size and just sheer live television.
Who was the host that year?
2002.
That wasn't one of the Jamie Foxx years, was it?
It was not. I remember almost crying because that was the year after 9/11, and that's when they honored the passengers, I think, on Flight 93.
Okay.
I think it was Samuel L. Jackson, let me see, who was the host of that year.
That sounds about right. Like that was right in the midst of the Samuel L. Jackson takeover of the world.
Remember those days?
Like, I think that might have been around the time when all the Star Wars movies were coming out.
Yes. It was, I take it back. It was Samuel, yeah.
Okay.
Jamie Foxx was after 2003.
Oh, and see, that's the one I think that was the Let Me Be Your Tennis Ball.
Yeah.
Serena Williams. You can hit me slower, hit me fast. You can put me right inside your bag. If you have not seen that, or if you haven't seen it in a while, do yourself a favor and look up Jamie Foxx Tennis Ball ESPYs online. But getting back to this, yeah, what did you think when you first heard these comments from Bob Costas?
I'm glad it had to be said. I'm glad someone said it, and I'm glad he said it in a respectful way where you knew he wasn't taking issue with Caitlyn Jenner or anything that might happen with that. It was just pointing out that, hey, look, this looks a little fishy to the outside looking in.
Yeah, and again, you know, Bob went on to say, you know, that's not to say it doesn't take courage to do what Caitlyn Jenner's done, but, you know, he was saying, you know, if you look around the sports landscape, there's courageous people every day, and people in high school, people in college, amateur athletes, and those are the people that really should be getting this kind of exposure, whereas, you know, Caitlyn Jenner, this is a great thing for the LGBT movement, but Caitlyn Jenner is going to be able to attract eyeballs just by virtue of who she is. Whereas, you know, you got a lot of people and, you know, a lot of people were calling for Lauryn Hill, like we talked about last week, that, you know, this might be their only chance to have their story told.
Yeah, I mean, if Caitlyn Jenner was an active athlete, say this was like Tyson Gay, who all of a sudden we found out he was doing his transition and he was still actively participating in the Olympics. That's one thing. But, you know, as Bob mentioned, he hasn't been active in the sport and going on 40 years now. So it's just, yes, he's one of the greatest athletes of all time, but when you're talking about a generation who knows Caitlyn Jenner as just a reality star and not as a Olympic athlete, then yeah, there's a bit of a gap there.
And I think Bob, you know, he was the right person to say this because, like you said, you know, he has a way of explaining things in a manner where even if you disagree with him, you can see his points. And I'm especially thinking back to when he did that special comment on the NFL a couple years ago talking about guns and in the aftermath of the Jovan Belcher murder-suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, he has a way of saying things that I don't think a lot of people, especially in the sports world, have that type of grace, for lack of a better word, in terms of handling quote-unquote controversial topics.
Now, people do think he's still a bit of a curmudgeon at times, especially during some of the NFL rants on Sunday. He'll go off on these tangents during halftime. But, you know, if you, I think compared him to Bryant Dumble, maybe if Bryant Dumble would have said it, he would have had a little more backlash. But Bryant, you know, at the end of Real Sports, he comes off as a little bit of a curmudgeon at times. And he, all right, side note, what the hell is he writing down when he's done doing these, he's after talking to these features and coming back to him? He's writing notes down like he's going to quiz them later, like what he just watched. I was like, what are you writing down? You've seen these videos before. It's always weird.
He's writing down how much money he just made.
Yeah.
He's like, that's another week I don't have to talk to Greg. Poor Greg.
poor Greg's hair.
Oh, and I'm not a big Family Guy fan, but Gumball to Gumball is still one of the best bits they've ever had on that show. But yeah, I think that, like, you know, you've worked with ESPN in terms of the ESPYs, like you mentioned. Do you think there's any way that they either don't do this now or they have a co-winner with Caitlyn Jenner and someone else?
No, I think they're all in. I think they might honor Lauryn Hill separately, but I think there's gonna only be one Arthur Ashe Award winner, and it'll be Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And again, this is not a slight at Caitlyn Jenner, but it did seem very, and you were right on it at the time. You know, it did seem very rehearsed. Like, as soon as the magazine cover dropped, the ESPY announcement came out.
And I would hope that this was just ESPN's call and it wasn't Caitlyn's. And I don't think it would be, but I hope it doesn't come out where it was Caitlyn Jenner's ploy. I doubt it would be. I just feel like the timing, you know, as I mentioned last week, the timing, they could have spaced it out a week, hell, a day. Just don't do it the same day as the cover. It just felt so orchestrated and so rehearsed.
Yep. So that's what's been going on with Caitlyn Jenner. We're keeping up with Caitlyn. But, you know, we got to keep up with the Kardashians as well. And for all of the grief that we give Kanye West in segment 4 and we have over the years, he may have just had the coolest birthday party ever, Marcus.
He did. Thanks to his wife. Mrs. West.
Yeah, Mrs. West came in and rented out the Staples Center and had a celebrity basketball game for Kanye West's birthday featuring real NBA referees, and the cynic in me thinks maybe that's why Tony Brothers and them dudes were missing so many calls in the finals, because they were still hung over from Kanye's party. But what did you think when you first saw, man, this big extravagant party featuring Kanye West, real NBA referees, and such basketball luminaries as Justin Bieber?
Well, it's funny, when I saw the story, the other big birthday story out here for the West family was for Northwest, and the rumor was that they were going to rent out Disneyland for the second birthday party for Northwest. And if you're given the option of renting out Staples Center for the night or renting out Disneyland for the night, I'm doing Disneyland.
Ooh, that's a good question.
You and your friends alone in Disneyland compared to, I mean, you can play basketball anywhere. Staples Center, it's great and all, but it's not like the Garden. There's no really historic. He's not an LA guy, so he has no really connection to Staples Center. But just the fact that you can shut down the mouse and bring your people in and they're catering to you for the night, that's a little more impressive.
That's cool. I think for me the determining factor would be who was on the guest list for the Staples Center birthday party.
That's true.
Like, if I get to hang out with, you know, Beyonce and Jigga and you know, Kobe and people like that, I might have to go with the Staples Center.
Now, I know there were celebrities in the game. I didn't see any NBA guys who were playing, right? I mean, the good ones are busy at the moment. So
yeah, the good ones are busy, and I don't think Lamar Odom was on the guest list.
No. Oh, no.
Poor Lamar.
Or Chris Humphrey.
That would be great, though, if it was all her exes. Reggie Bush was in the game.
Starting five.
Ray J. Oh, she got a starting five of Ray J, Kanye, Reggie Bush, Lamar Odom's up in the game, Humphries is in the game. Oh, that would be amazing.
And I think it was 110,000, which doesn't seem like a lot. It is a lot, but
not for Kanye.
It's cheaper than cheaper than Disney. Trust me.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Here's the thing, Marcus. And I'm not disparaging with renting out Disney, because that is a cool thing and a once in a lifetime type of experience. But not for a 2-year-old, man.
Too young.
Yeah, way too young. Plus, what are you gonna do next year? Because you can't go from renting out Disney World to going to Chuck E. Cheese. You can't step back like that.
Well, they had Coachella for the 1-year-old party.
Did Outkast perform there?
No.
You 1-year-olds ain't ready for Outkast?
2-year-old Disneyland. Yeah, I guess you really... 3's gonna be tough.
I was gonna say, I think you gotta be at least 5 to appreciate Disneyland.
Oh, at least.
It's like, yeah, what do you do after the Disneyland birthday party? It's hard to top that. Is Euro Disney still open?
Yep, still open in Paris.
I guess they could go to Euro Disney.
I mean, if they could shut down Disney World, I mean, that'd be some serious dollars, but...
Maybe he could make an all-new version of Captain EO, Captain Yeezy.
Now, that'd be good. If he did a remake of Captain EO for his birthday.
Oh, Captain Yeezy. That'd be great. Just Michael talking to the... Kanye talking to the aliens. You ain't got the answers, Skignor. You ain't got the answers. How, Skignor? How I'm going to do that, Skignor? Kanye, you just have to try again. Why, Skignor? You ain't got the answers, man.
Kanye.
I want, like, that's kind of the next level for Kanye, I think, is, you know, he's pretty much achieved what he can achieve through music in terms of production and also as a rapper, but, he's done some stuff in the fashion world. I think Kanye's got to go into that next level and start doing movies.
He's got to be a character. Michael was a character.
Yeah, I'd love to see Kanye in some dramatic roles.
Well, I mean, Mike didn't have a lot of roles.
No, Mike had... He was in a... He had that cameo in Men in Black 2.
Yeah.
Which was... Yeah, Mike didn't have a lot of roles, but I think Kanye would be...
Remember the Time? Is that Time's a role?
Remember the Time, yeah. Remember the Time and Thriller, I guess you could call them movies.
Yeah. And Captain Neo, which was like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Then he had that one. Did you ever see the one Ghosts, where he was like the old man?
Not the Whoopi Goldberg ghost, right?
No, it was like one of those long
Cosby, whatever that was.
Music. Oh, that was Ghost Dad.
Ghost Dad, that's right.
Yeah, Ghost Dad. Now that takes on a whole new meaning.
Oof.
Like, why is Ghost Dad watching me sleep? But Ghost was the one that came out with Blood on the Dance Floor. And it was like a 15-minute music video where Michael Jackson played both Michael Jackson, who like ran this haunted house, and then like this old man in town that just was like trying to shut down the haunted house.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that one.
Finally, like the spirits got into the old man, and he started like doing all the Michael Jackson dance moves, but in his old man body. Like, yeah, it was pretty ridiculous, but you know, as far as music videos goes, it was okay. But, yeah, I'm wondering what the next... What the next level is for Kanye.
It's gotta be movies or an attraction. Mike was ahead of his time to do that in the 80s. And what was that, Spielberg and Coppola and all those guys who were...
Yeah.
In 3D technology at the time. If you'd come up with something like that in a theme park or Disney or Universal.
Let's see Spike Lee direct it.
Well.
Speaking of Spike Lee, have you heard about his latest venture?
The 2K16 thing?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Spike Lee is like writing the story mode for a career mode for NBA 2K16. And at first I was like, cool, you know, it'll be something interesting, something different. But he lost me at the name of the main character.
What was it?
You play a rising basketball star named Frequency Vibrations.
That's the name?
Yeah, I looked at it, I was like, hold on, did I read this correctly? Did this? The character's name is Frequency Vibrations. Come
that's,
on.
That's, could it at least be what's his face? What was his character?
Jesus Shuttlesworth?
No, the other one. On all the commercials.
Mars Blackman.
Yeah, it would be Mars Blackman. Come on.
Yeah, but no, it's Frequency Vibrations. Like, come on, man. Are you even trying, Spike?
He's not.
And the jokes are already coming out. Like, people are like, the my career mode, the only team you can sign with is the Knicks.
I mean, that game doesn't need his presence. So I'm hoping whatever involvement he has doesn't take away from the actual.
It'd be like the Jay-Z involvement.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of minimal.
My game is great as it is.
Yeah. And they can't really do a whole lot because they've, you know, A, the game is like general audiences.
Yeah.
And B, it's, you know, an NBA product. So, you know, he can't really get into like the real stuff that goes on in a basketball player's world, like drugs and baby mamas and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Tabo Sepulosa mode where you get beat up by cops at a nightclub.
No one's talking about that.
Yeah, they people kind of swept that under the rug.
Yeah.
So will you be picking up 2K16 to see what Spike Lee does?
Not so much for Spike. I was going to get it anyways, but yeah, I'll make sure to get that in September.
But I think that's like the one game I still play. Like I used to be a huge gamer. Now I pretty much the only games I'll play are the NBA 2K games. And I'll check out the wrestling games when they first come out, but I won't buy them. I'll just rent them and see if they're any good. And normally they're not.
Yeah, this year was not a good game. Hopefully, 2K16 will be better, but the 15 version, for at least for PS4, was not good.
Like, you know, if I didn't buy it and it had Sting on it, like it wasn't that great. Like you would think that would be a they would already have my money just for Sting.
Do you think Sting made 2K16?
Ooh, I think so. I think, you know, if you got the license, why not use it? He won't be an exclusive, like, because not this year you had to pre-order him.
Yeah,
but I think he'll be like one of those hidden characters that you unlock through a story mode or something like that. But yeah, if you got him, why not use him? Especially if he comes back for WrestleMania next year.
Yeah, he's been awfully quiet since WrestleMania. I wonder what he's up to.
Yeah, the last time we saw him on TV, he was beating up Bo Dallas.
That's how you go out.
Yes, because that's... Like, I hope that check cleared, Sting, because they didn't really do a whole lot with you after WrestleMania. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see if Sting comes back. But, yeah, will you be ready to come back next week, Marcus? On this particular program.
I will be, and since we're talking wrestling, Money in the Bank Sunday.
Who do you like? Will you be watching? Will you be watching?
It's during the finals, so I don't know. Maybe on the iPad?
Yeah, I'll probably have it on in the background.
But I think BitTV goes to NBA for sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna call my cable company in nefarious means. Get him in on this. But yeah, I think I'll be watching it. Like, really, the only matches that intrigue me are Owens and Cena, and then the Money in the Bank match itself, which I pretty much think Roman Reigns has got that.
If he does win, better reaction than the Rumble, correct?
I would think so, because I think they've done a pretty decent job of kind of pumping the brakes a little bit and getting the fans behind him, at least more so than, you know, the going into the Rumble where you had Daniel Bryan kind of being the one, the guy that the people wanted, and Roman being the guy the company wanted.
I still feel bad for Roman because it was nothing he did. He was put in a situation where he was anointed as the quote-unquote guy, and then the fans who seemed to really only get passionate between the months of January and April, decided to get vocal. But, you know, now that it's June, July, there's not the same interest, I think, from the hardcore fans. So maybe it's a good time for him to just cash it or get the briefcase and cash it in before Mania and then go from there.
Yeah, I definitely think I think he's going to cash it in before Mania. Who knows? We might get it as early as SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, I just you had to do Brock and Rollins, but
yeah.
I mean, if they went straight to Brock and Reigns again, I wouldn't be too upset at that either.
No. So yeah, and I think he'd get a better reaction this time, even though Brock would still be the
yeah, that'd the be tough. Favorite. Maybe, yeah, I would maybe stay away from Brock because I think Brock coming back will be babyface for sure. So
yeah. We'll see. Who knows? Maybe he'll win the title and turn heel.
He'd be a good heel. I think better heel than a better babyface at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we all know the top babyface, if you watch Raw this week, was R-Truth.
Oh, that was great.
That was maybe the best use of R-Truth since he was wearing the Confederate outfit in the middle of the ring in Richmond.
Oh, that was great. All right. We need more nuggets like that. That rarely happens where you get a curveball on these scripted shows that are just so just by the book.
Like that literally was the funniest thing on Raw in weeks, maybe in years.
Definitely this year. There hasn't been anything funnier this year, which is sad because we're already in June and there's nothing. Looking back, comedy wise, there's nothing that I can go back and remember that made me actually laugh out loud. So.
And I think what made it so funny was that most people probably thought he was in the match.
I thought so too. Like, there's only seven guys. I just figured, oh, okay, there's an eighth guy coming.
Like, what are you doing out here? I'm here telling people what I'm going to do with Money in the Bank. You're not in the match. Oh, that's on me, New Orleans. That's my bad, Kane.
The only thing that was missing was he should have shuffled off like his character does on the network.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only thing he was missing.
Yeah. Like, you know what? Like, you know, we talked about with JTG, there seems to be certain spots that black wrestlers get pegged in. But damn it if R-Truth isn't making the most of his little spot.
He's doing his best.
He's doing his best. He's doing the best he can.
Yeah.
Much. I mean, I think that's not to alienate any of our listeners, but I think that's a black trait. You know, maybe a minority trait in general. But, you know, you take the scraps and you make something out of it. You know, with slaves, they didn't get the best part of the pigs, and they made chitlins. They made pig's feet.
So R-Truth is a slave? You taught him a slave?
I wouldn't go for... Maybe he's an indentured servant.
Slave tendencies?
he's a slave to his job. There you go.
That's a safe way.
He's committed. I was going to go somewhere with Vince McMahon, but I think we've already... Like if we're not gonna get if we haven't gotten a letter yet, I think my comment would be the one that pushed it over the line.
Yeah.
But yeah. Over under. Do you think we get a call this week from somebody?
Oh no.
Okay. Because if we do, I'm directing them to you.
That's fine.
You and John Murray.
He's not an employee. He's a free agent. And the views and thoughts expressed in that interview are from
we had on wasn't JTG. An employee either.
But he was also slandering the company, let's be honest here. What JTG said was not really bad at all.
Plus, there was an important element missing from this discussion than we had in the last discussion.
Oh,
somebody that may have fanned the flames a little bit.
Of course.
So, yeah. This conversation wasn't as nasty, we'll just say.
No.
So, oh, but let's just say, Marcus, some people... At some company in Connecticut did want to contact you. How could they do that?
You can contact me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
That'd be great if they started sending like legal documents through Twitter.
In your DMs?
Yeah. Like, oh, I thought my Taz DMs were bad enough.
Yeah.
Now I got Paul Levesque writing me. That's your boy, though, so maybe you can get me out of that trouble.
I'll try.
You can hit me up on Twitter, N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. I got a little tripped up there. Maybe a little Triple H'd up there.
A little nervous.
Yeah, got a little scared. My life flashed before me.
Some heat going on.
Like, damn, why did I give out my Twitter?
Yeah.
But you can find me at In the Number 8 MLZAIK. Find the show on Twitter, Cospod, KOS_POD. Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. Shout out to everybody that wrote questions in this week for JTG. I think, you know, Marcus and I have been talking. We're going to do a little bit more fan interaction type stuff as we get into the summer months. So you can look forward to that. And let's see. iTunes, Stitcher, like the show. Subscribe to the show. That's what I was trying to say. And share the show, most importantly. If you like the show, share it with your friends. I think that's it, Marcus.
Yeah, I think that's it. If something happens in the finals, he might be back for a separate show, but we'll see. We'll play it by ear.
We'll see. We'll see. It depends. You know, Marcus might be so caught up in Money in the Bank that he's not available to record.
Yeah, oh, it would be game 5, yeah. That's a good point.
I think though, yeah. If let's say the finals end on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and Money in the Bank is any way halfway decent, we might have to do a show.
Yeah, we might do a show. There you go.
Yeah, maybe at least a Royal Rant.
Yeah.
So yeah, that may be coming down the pike. So stay tuned for that. We'll let you know on our social media platforms if we decide to do a show. But unless we do. The next time you'll hear from us will be next week for a brand new edition of the World's Most Dangerous Sports Show, where we'll be talking NBA Finals. Maybe Marcus will have actually watched a hockey game by then.
Maybe.
And we can do a hockey minute. Unless he's going out to watch Jurassic World this week and misses the hockey game.
Also, maybe.
We'll either have a hockey minute or a movie minute. And we'll also have maybe Jamie and Bill from Mr. Throwback Thursday on the show to discuss, amongst other things, Outkast, Bomani Jones, and who knows? Maybe Bill is recovered from that Rangers loss and he actually wants to talk some hockey with us.
We'll see. So we've been trying this now for weeks and he's dodging us. So
yeah. So you know, I would say something, but I don't want to get Bill in trouble.
No, don't do that.
So, we love Bill and Jamie, even though that you know, things are a little tense right now, but we'll see. You know, it's a dysfunctional family. <Uh-oh>. Was that with that great line in Major Payne? It's like, families break up. Don't you watch Oprah? So, that's what we got in store coming up for you guys, and so we hope you enjoyed the show this week. So unless Marcus has anything else to say, we're going to wrap this up so I can get some rest. It's been a long week, Marcus. I've had a, you know, I've talked to Kenny King this week, talked to JTG. I'm exhausted.
So black workers tire you out? Is that what you're saying?
I'm tired of black workers. Well, who's the, I want to be the, like, you know, when people need to go out and bare their soul. Who's the person in the news media that they go to now? Like, who's the go-to person?
Like it used to be
Oprah. Is it Diane Sawyer?
If you're talking sports, it's probably for a certain athlete, still Ahmad Rashad, maybe, on the sports side. But news? Well, Barbara's gone. Oprah's not really around.
I'm thinking Diane Sawyer, maybe.
Maybe.
Like, I want to be the Diane Sawyer for the black wrestlers out there. Like, you need a safe place to come express your frustrations with the industry.
So you want to be a therapist, essentially. So they got some issues to let go.
Yeah. Yeah, if you got some issues, you can sit down on a King of Sport couch, and we can talk it out. So, yeah, the offer is out there for any black worker that needs to get something off their chest. Or any white worker, too. But, you know, we haven't had a lot of luck with white workers.
No.
That's all that's going to be said about that.
Yep.
I don't want that. Yeah. Don't get fired, Marcus.
No.
From this free podcast that neither one of us is getting paid for. So that's going to do it. Oh, real quick.
Yep.
We keep trying to end this thing. What did you make of the Dwayne Wade, LeBron James interaction at the finals last night? Dwayne, of course, a analyst now for ABC in the offseason. What did you make of that?
I saw the headlines, but I didn't actually watch it last night, so I can't give you a complete answer. But I, just from what I saw, the fact that it even happened, thought it was a little interesting.
It was, yeah, I thought it was very interesting. Like, I'm not sure if, I still think Dwayne's going to end up back in Miami. But if he doesn't, like, if you're a scared Miami Heat fan that thinks Dwayne Wade might be going to Cleveland, nothing that you saw on the broadcast yesterday dissuaded that. Because, like, after the game, man, it was like an old married couple.
Mm.
Like, Dwayne, like, it was Dwayne, it was LeBron, and I forget, it might have been Steve Levy. That was the other guy.
So if you're Poppy and you're worried about what's happening with your best player.
Yeah, because they were just like telling old stories, and LeBron was like, man, you told me it was hard to win like this. And then Dwayne was like, you know, people talk about the efficiency, and every day LeBron would come and get on me talking about 50-50-50, Dwayne. And so he's looking at LeBron, 50-50-50. And he's like, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And it's like, yeah, these guys are like, I can easily see if Dwayne does not re-sign. Like, if he goes anywhere, I would see him going to Cleveland. Because you could tell, like, there's a – if Dwayne's not mad that he gave up that money for LeBron, like, they're really close. Like, yeah. It's not fake. So we could see that if Pat Riley doesn't act right and pay that man some money. So, yeah, that just want to throw that in there because I thought that was pretty interesting. But you know what is even more interesting than that, Marcus?
What's that?
This delicious food I got in my refrigerator. So I think we're going to go into finally put a bow on this show so I can eat and recharge my body and you know, just enjoy the rest of this evening.
All right.
All right. So thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Come back next week and we'll do it again. For Marcus Vanderberg, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. Rest in peace to brother Virgil Runnels, a.k.a. the Mac and Dween Dusty Rose, if you will, Daddy. And you've been down with the king.
He's just a common man, working hard with his hands. He's just a common man, working hard for the man. Hey, he's a American dream. Hey, he's a American dream. If you are black or white, redneck, funky, that's all right. Blue eyes with a lot of soul.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.